This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. We're switching gears. Have you ever experienced shortness of breath? It can come on suddenly for a whole variety of reasons, or it can be a chronic condition caused by illnesses like asthma or COPD. How dangerous is it, and how to recognize signs and symptoms and what to do about it? We are going to talk to our house doctor, Zachary Levine. First, let me give you the numbers again, because he's going to take your calls and questions. 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-744-740. Again, we're talking about shortness of breath, or, we'll probably take whatever your question you might have. Zach, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Excellent, thanks. The weather is beautiful.
Great.
So shortness of breath, there are all kinds of reasons you can have acute shortness of breath. How does it usually come on, and how can you tell what the reason is?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There are a lot of different reasons, and it's certainly one of the most common reasons that people come to see me in the emergency department. It's always in the top five. And like you said, the most common cause is everyone thinks of the lungs, which obviously is right up there, because a problem with the lungs, which are the breathing center, can certainly make you feel short of breath. So not getting enough oxygen for whatever reason, whether it be asthma or COPD, like you mentioned, or a blood clot in the lungs, or a cancer, or fluid in the lungs. But then there are other causes as well, including cardiovascular reasons, such like I mentioned, fluid in the lungs, which is usually a heart problem rather than a lung problem. If someone's very anemic or has low thyroid function or adrenal insufficiency, and there are also some nerve problems as well, such as ALS and myasthenia gravis, which can make people quite short of breath. And so it's a very, very uncomfortable feeling, as people feel it's an air hunger. People feel they just can't get enough air. And the question is always, is it something serious or not? And it always feels serious. And to be honest, it always needs to be taken seriously. There are sometimes more benign causes, including things like psychological reasons, including panic attacks, which can very closely mimic heart attacks and very serious things. But you can never really say that until you've made sure that all the life-threatening causes are ruled out.
It's very interesting that you mentioned that with my late mother-in-law. We thought, and she was very elderly, we thought she was having a heart condition. She would have, and then it turned out that it was panic attacks, and it turned out that those panic attacks were, we should have known it was a sign that she was getting Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. But the truth is, like you said, it's almost, sometimes it's totally indistinguishable until you've actually done the tests to prove that it's not a heart attack. The symptoms can be very, very similar. And especially, if you're someone older, if you have risk factors, diabetes, high blood pressure, you're a smoker, you have to take, you always have to rule out the life-threatening thing first.
Yeah, and again, the shortness of breath, it can mean that you're having a heart attack.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. People think of chest pain, and even that is a bit of a misnomer, because a lot of people, especially women, don't get pain. They might get chest discomfort or pressure or back pain or neck pain, but some people don't have any pain or discomfort, and they just feel short of breath, and that's how their body interprets a heart attack, and so it needs to be taken seriously.
Again, is there any way to distinguish while you're having these symptoms what it might be or how serious it is without, getting yourself to the emergency ward?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of clues. The problem is, unless you have, it's easy for us in the emergency department, because we have access to everything. We have your heart rate, we have your blood pressure, we can check your oxygen. Most people just don't have any, these are not very advanced machines, but most people don't have them in their homes. So, I mean, what you can do is, number one, you can check your pulse. If you know how to check your pulse, you can feel it either in your neck or in your wrist. And if it's going very quickly, that's a sign. Now, again, that can happen with a panic attack as well, but, you know, it's still, it can't be ignored regardless of what the cause is. And the other things that I would say are, I mean, number one, if it's persistent and you just don't feel you're getting enough air and you're starting to get lightheaded, you basically have to call 911 or call for help, someone to help you bring you to the hospital. And then the other thing that we look at is associated symptoms. So it's frequent that if it is a heart problem, you'll have other symptoms as well. So you'll have some discomfort elsewhere. You'll have some lightheadedness, often some nausea and vomiting as well. And if it's worse when you exert yourself, so if you're a bit short of breath or you're okay when you're not doing anything, you're relaxing, but when you exert yourself a bit, then you start to get short of breath, that's a quite a good clue that it's related to heart function because, you know, when you exert yourself, there's more strain on the heart and oftentimes either the strain on the heart is being sensed as shortness of breath or you're getting some water in the lungs because the heart isn't pumping properly. So that's another good clue if it's worse when you exert yourself that it might be heart related.
Okay. What about the chronic things that can cause shortness of breath?
Yes. Well, so there are a number of different things and obviously some people who have had it for many years know what it is. And hopefully by the time it's chronic, people have visited a doctor so they get an idea of what's causing it. And there are a number of them. I mean, one that you mentioned off the top is COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which includes chronic bronchitis and emphysema. And it's most commonly from years of smoking, but it can be from exposure to other things like asbestos and whatnot. And that's a chronic lung disease where the air exchange is just not as effective, and people get short of breath either at rest or with minimal exertion. And there's certainly treatments for it, but some people end up, we all know or have seen people who need to be on oxygen all the time just because they're not able to extract enough oxygen from the usual air. Other causes include cardiac disease as well, as I mentioned, like if you have water on the lungs, that can last for a long time. And then nerve, another one that's we see less commonly, but is certainly significant, anemia, although anemia can be reversed, but nerve things such as Lou Gehrig's disease or Guillain-Barré or myasthenia gravis, those are all nerve diseases where you just don't, your lungs and the diaphragm aren't strong enough to bring in the air. And then as a result of that, you become short of breath because your body senses when you don't have enough oxygen or when you have too much carbon dioxide, when you can't blow it off. And so if you're not strong enough, if the nerves aren't working, the muscles aren't working, then your body senses it, and it gives you this feeling because it wants you to try to breathe harder. But the problem is if you're not able to breathe harder, it's just a vicious circle. You feel worse and worse.
Okay, Dr. Zach, we have to take a quick break. I'm going to give the numbers again. 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-740-4740. I'm here with our house doctor, Zachary Levine. We're talking about shortness of breath, but he will take your calls and questions on any medical issue or question that you might have. Again, 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-744-740. And we'll be back after this.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to 1. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. I am on the line with our house doctor, Zachary Levine. The numbers to call, 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-744-740. We're talking about shortness of breath. We're taking your calls actually on whatever medical issue you would like to bring up. I've got Linda in Keswick. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Libby. Hi, Dr. Zach.
Hi.
Just received yesterday that I'm beginning stages of COPD, but I also have pneumonia, and I'm...
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, so am I. So what can I do? He's got me on an antibiotic and prednisone, but I don't know what else to do. I'm trying to cough everything up, and yeah.
Yeah, so Linda, thanks for your call. So for the pneumonia, the real thing to do is really the antibiotics, you know, unless there are such things as viral pneumonias, but the majority of cases when you get diagnosed, are bacterial, and you need to take the antibiotics. And there's not that much to do aside from the same things you should do for any infection, which are basically stay hydrated, take it easy a bit, get enough sleep. You let your body sort of take care of the rest in terms of getting the stuff up. In terms of the COPD, that's a whole sort of other kettle of fish. And you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, some people with COPD have chronic shortness of breath and whatnot. But you know, that's certainly not everyone. However, it does mean that it's worth being more aware of your surroundings in terms of staying away, if you can, from smoke and very serious pollution, if you can. And it's also still important to be active. You know, the more active you are physically, the better, because your body just gets more efficient at using oxygen and at getting rid of carbon dioxide. And so the less active you are, the less efficient the air exchange is. So staying active is important, as well as, you know, just staying away from those things that irritate the lungs. So like I mentioned, smoke and pollution.
Okay, because like I walk the dog a couple of times a day. So
good.
And Keswick's built on hills.
Yeah.
So
that's
yeah.
great. So yeah, keep that up. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I just wondered if there was anything else that I could do other than what I am doing at this point.
It doesn't sound like it. I mean, talk to your doctor if there's anything specific. And sometimes, you know, sometimes people with COPD, your doctor, or if you see a respirologist, sometimes there'll be a specific action plan. Sometimes people have a specific medications that they take at the onset of when they start to get symptoms. Like I know some respirologists will prescribe antibiotics and prednisone and/or the puffers when someone can actually pick up at the pharmacy without seeing their doctor once the symptoms comes on, to kind of nip it in the bud before it becomes very serious. But in terms of lifestyle stuff, it sounds like you're doing the right stuff, getting a lot of fresh air and staying active.
Okay, perfect. Thank you both very much. Y'all have a good day.
Okay, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Zach, I meant to ask, I know someone who is having a symptom of shortness of breath, and it's related to cancer treatment. He's on something pretty aggressive. Is that a common thing?
It can be. Is it a chemotherapy agent, by the way?
It's an immunotherapy agent.
Immunotherapy. So, yes. I mean, so the answer is yes. It definitely is a side effect of some treatments. And as you know, some of these treatments are very, very powerful, and a lot of them have very strong side effects. It's important for this person to it's important that anyone who has shortness of breath, especially with cancer, bring it up with the doctor, because you know, obviously, we see it all the time, people with cancer with shortness of breath, especially lung cancer. Now, it can be from, the thing is, to keep in mind, is it can be from the treatments, but it can also be from progression of disease. And something that, you know, we always need to keep in mind, when you have cancer, it increases your risk of blood clots as well. And that's another serious cause of shortness of breath, blood clots in the lungs. And that's something that is a different treatment. You have to treat it with blood thinners. And so if that's not thought of, then, you know, it can cause some very serious sequelae. So it may well be. It's important that someone who's on that kind of treatment at least runs it by their doctor and says, and if the doctor says, yes, it's just from the treatment, then I guess, unfortunately, it's something they have to bear with. But it's important to rule out other stuff for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting, because on top of everything else, it's pretty scary.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the thing. I mean, the shortness of breath is very scary, and it's a warning sign of something. You know, it's a very good one. It's like pain is a warning sign that the body gives us. Shortness of breath is a warning sign as well. We're not getting enough oxygen, so something needs to be done about it. And so it's something very difficult, and actually that shouldn't be ignored unless you've had very specific, you know, you've been looked at very closely by your doctor, and he says, no, it's not dangerous. But it's very difficult to just ignore that sort of thing.
And how common is COPD? I think it's getting more common.
Yeah, you know, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. We certainly see it all the time in our practice. And there's a respiratory hospital near that's associated where I work as well. And so it's very, very common. I mean, especially, like I mentioned, it's still primarily associated with cigarette smoking. However, it is associated with other things, including being exposed to different pollutants, including asbestos. And also there are some congenital reasons, just some genetic reasons why some people develop COPD even without being exposed to anything. So it's very common, and it's something And there are, if people can Google it, of course, but I know there is a support, there's a Canadian COPD Society that can give people a lot of resources and support, and even just, you know, even just to have a community is helpful, even if you don't use any of the specific resources. So if people are interested, I would just go online and look for that.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We have Doug in Selwyn. Hello, Doug.
Let me just turn the radio down.
Yep.
Question for yourself, Libby.
Okay.
Yesterday's program.
Yep.
Near the latter part of it, a lady called in and mentioned that she had been misdiagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Correct.
And as a result, she had lost a lot of weight and so forth and so forth. And she said it, instead of the cancer, it was some other thing that, and I didn't quite catch what she said that she had.
I don't think she said what she had. I don't know what she had.
I thought she said that it turned out to be, and it wasn't something that I've, it wasn't a term, you know, that I've heard regarding.
Why are you worried that you have something like that?
Well, several years ago, when I say several, it's been 4 years, I had pancreas attack.
Pancreatitis.
Pancreatitis. And after that was cleared up, they did down my throat.
With, an endoscopy, yes.
Yeah, and then up the back door as well.
Yep.
And didn't find anything there. Then I had MRIs.
Okay.
And they said everything was fine. But in the meantime, I can't eat any of the food that I used to eat. Like, for an example, I can't eat pizza. I can't eat, you know, the spaghetti with the, you know, the sauce and all of that. I think I'd be sick to my stomach if I did.
Let's ask Dr. Zach.
Okay.
Well, you know, Doug, you bring up a lot of important topics. I mean, and one of which you brought up at the beginning is, well, from yesterday, it sounds like, is misdiagnosis and medical error, which are areas that I'm very interested in. But anyway, in terms of digestive problems, it sounds like you've certainly had the beginning of what you need. The endoscopy or gastroscopy and the colonoscopy are certainly the places to start. Doug, have you followed up? Like, have you seen a gastroenterologist since then? If they don't find anything there, then certainly they would usually do further testing.
Well, the last thing I had was the MRIs.
Oh, yeah.
And they were apparently clean. They couldn't find anything gallbladder-wise, nothing in the gut area.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I continue to lose weight. Like over the last several years, I've gone from maybe 180 down to maybe 135.
Wow, that's
yeah, I can't eat anything that would put weight on me.
Have you been tested for an ulcer, which is now called H. pylori, or just for acid reflux?
Not that I know of. I don't think I have, no.
No, that's definitely a good idea. Often they will do it when they do the endoscopy. They can take biopsies or there's a blood test. But that's definitely an idea. I agree with you and Libby. I mean, that's a very significant amount of weight to lose. So you need to keep getting investigated until they figure it out.
Yeah, like, excuse me, I wasn't overweight to begin with. Well, at least maybe couple pounds. I mean, I was like 180 when it all began, and for almost 6 foot tall, I don't think that's too heavy. So,
no.
But I'm getting down to. I've got a closet full of clothes that I can't wear anymore.
Yeah.
Well, the tailor could fix that, but you really should be investigated because that sounds like a very dramatic weight loss.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I'm in an area where there's not a lot of help for this such thing, and I always mispronounce it, the gastroenterologist. Yeah, that I had been seeing. I hate to say it, but his son stabbed him to death.
Oh my goodness!
No. Yeah, just after Christmas, and
oh dear.
Now, in the meantime, there's another one here in Peterborough, but they've got a list, you know, as long as their arm.
Yeah.
To get in to see them, so.
Well, get on that list and tell them that you're available if there's a cancellation at the last minute.
Yeah, well, right now, that list is probably about 8 months long.
Well, and your family doctor, keep going back to your family doctor, and because they can also quarterback and organize testing in the meantime, in between.
Yeah, well, he's the one that's done the, he's been the liaison between, the gastroenterologist and myself, of course, but he himself doesn't have a clue. I mean, he
have you had any testing, Doug, of stool? I mean, I'm just wondering, or blood tests to see if you're malabsorbed. Sometimes people can't absorb certain things, and so stuff kind of goes right through them.
I suggested that to the gastroenter, whatever, and he kind of sloughed it off.
Huh.
And because I told him when I use the bathroom, my stool floats, it doesn't think.
Yeah.
And when I've read different things, it says, you know, if it floats, it means it's got fat in it and it's not being absorbed. And is that correct?
Well, it can, yeah. Certainly if there's what looks like fatty stuff that, at the surface, there can be some extra fat in there. And that, yeah, it can be. It's not like a hard and fast rule, but it's certainly one clue that you may be malabsorbing somewhat, yeah.
Yeah. No, he turned the dial to off on that subject.
Okay, well, you get in line for a specialist and get that investigated.
Okay.
Thanks, Doug, for your call.
And just one quick thing.
We've really got to go. We have a few minutes left, and we have other callers waiting.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye. Barb in Waterloo. Hi, Barb.
Waterloo?
Hello?
Hello.
Yes?
Barb in Waterloo. I wanted to know if Dr. Zach could tell me what the symptoms are of Parkinson's and what tests they could do for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the most common symptoms of Parkinson, the most that everyone knows is a resting tremor. So basically shaking of the hands, most commonly the hands, but it can be anywhere. It can be at the head as well. It can be at the feet. And it's resting. It's resting. So when you're not moving, as opposed to an intention tremor where you're trying to do something. Other symptoms that people can have is changes in their writing. So they call it micrographia. So people write very very small. A shuffling gait. So basically, people have more difficulty lifting their legs and having a normal walking gait. So they shuffle along, and just generally stiffness is another symptom. There's no test, like there's no blood test or MRI. It's really a diagnosis that is made clinically on physical examination, ideally by a neurologist, by a specialist in movement disorders, just because it's not obvious. And there are a number of things that can cause all those different symptoms, especially tremors, which can sometimes be totally benign. But those are the hallmark symptoms of Parkinson's disease.
Okay. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Okay. We are almost out of time. We can take one more call, but really quickly, less than a minute, Alice in Peterborough.
I'm reacting to the caller, that gentleman who was having difficulty swallowing.
Okay.
I had the same symptoms, and I was discovered I had a tumor in my esophagus, and they removed this esophagus.
Yeah.
And sorry to hear that.
And took half my stomach to make another esophagus. I'm doing pretty well.
Good.
I'm cancer free for about 7 years.
Excellent.
Oh, good for you, Alice.
And so I was just, that gentleman, if he's still listening, I saw Dr. Dickey, and he diagnosed me before he did any tests. He basically told me what was wrong. And good. I just had surgery. I didn't have any treatment because I preferred not the treatments, and everything worked out well.
Well,
I have a question, though, for you, the doctor. I have a side effect I think from that surgery is I have a lot of mucus Okay, mucus.
Alice, we're going to have to go. Zach, if you can answer in 30 seconds.
Okay, so two things quickly. So, yeah, I mean, some people do have that side effect. Some people do have a bit of a reduced digestive time, and so things can pass through them very quickly as well. There's not a whole heck of a lot. I would talk to the thoracic surgeon who did it, because sometimes they have some suggestions, but it is a recognized side effect. And the endoscopy, it sounds like that Doug at least did have the scope. Usually the endoscopy, the gastroscopy, is the test to have to make sure that your esophagus and your stomach are okay.
Okay.
All right.
Dr. Zach, thank you for all of that today.
Thanks.
That's it. You're welcome.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.